Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Az from FPL Black Box.
Az, great to be back. Great to have the football back. Great to have FPL back. And an even better weekend for you. Brighton, top of the league. You must have enjoyed that.
Brighton, top of the league. Decent start to my game week. You for the first off the bench.
What could be better?
Perfect. The perfect opening week. Yeah, it's been a good start, as I'm sure we're going to talk about on this. So yeah, I'm pretty happy.
Very good. And game week score wise, go on, hit me. What'd you get?
I'm on 65 points, which, you know, it's 2.3 million overall. But I
are we looking at overall ranks already? No, we're not.
I think we have to, but only because every other year, I think I've been about 4 or 5 million off to a bad start. You know, we're going to talk about some of the issues that people have got with different players. Not to rub it in for anyone with your quants and people, but I haven't got too many issues in my side, apart from a certain Brighton left back.
Well, yeah, we'll cover him in just a second. It was 64 for me, so 1 point behind you. And I feel the same as you. It feels like a solid start. I'm kind of pretty much okay with it. I always try and come out of game week one, as you've said there, Az, with as fewer problems as possible. Mm. That to me is success. And I don't feel like I've got too many of those. Christopher Nkunku, I'm looking at you. Let's get into it then. Game week one brought plenty of FPL points with a high game week average of 57. So we both did all right. Some issues for FPL managers, though. As we say, we had injuries, benchings, red cards. It was the quintessential game week one in FPL. It says in my notes here, ask Az where he would like to start. I'm going to suggest, Az, that you'd perhaps like to start with your team, top of the league, as you said before. Let's go there. Brighton. What a win.
Where else would we start if you were going to come to me on that? It was a great performance. I mean, I do think, you know, if you watch the first 10, 15 minutes of the game, it was all Everton. And, you know, they had good chances, goal ruled offside, a couple of good saves from Steele. It was a bit nervy, but, you know, it's always difficult when you're playing away from home in that first game. You know, the Goodison Park crowd were really up for it. But as soon as we got the goal, the floodgates just opened.
Yes.
I thought we were excellent throughout. And yeah, let's not talk about Barco missing out on the clean sheet.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot of narrative, wasn't there, in pre-season about Barco getting the start. He had a really
was
good
there?
Pre-season.
No.
He was on. Yeah, listen, I've got, you know, no, he's in my team. And, you know, I said at the top of the pod about, you know, some problems that we've got. I still don't see him as a problem. He's a 4.0 at the end of the day. If it was, you know, Haaland was injured or Saka had got sent off or something, then yeah, okay, that's a problem we've got to deal with. But Barco at a 4.0, I still think he's a relatively attacking fullback. Has been on a lot of corners in pre-season. Little bit of rumour or narrative about potentially a knock or something that he might have picked up just before the game, and maybe that's why he didn't get any minutes. So yeah, what's your take on it as a Brighton fan? I'm not concerned. You've got three home games in the next four. He's going to get some minutes, isn't he?
I think going into this match, we knew there was going to be a bit of risk with him, given that he wasn't first choice for us last season. Obviously, Stupinan was there and got injured. We thought he'd start the season strongly. Had a good pre-season, like you mentioned, on corners, looked quite integral to a lot of the attacking play. But we knew with Kadioglu potentially coming in, Stupinan back, it was never going to be a long-term pick anyway, unless he really kind of excelled in the first few weeks. And like you say, 4 million, I think he's a player that you can just leave and deal with when we wildcard in 5 or 6 weeks. I was very surprised to see him miss out, though. You know, Hinshelwood played at left back. I don't think he's ever played there before. And, you know, Veltman carried on the right, who had looked a little bit ropey in pre-season. So it's things we didn't have another left back in like the match day squad. I thought it was a lock that he would play, but unfortunately misses out. And then of course Brighton go on and get the clean sheet. So we're all missing out on 6 points.
So speaking of fullbacks that had a difficult day, I mean, Ashley Young at the back there, when I saw the lineup get posted for Everton and I saw that he was up against Karim Mitoma on that side, you know, it's funny, isn't it, Az? I mean, so many options at 6.5 that I probably didn't put as much thought into Karim Mitoma as I should have done in pre-season. So plenty of other, you know, Brighton attacking options. João Pedro obviously was the one that got a lot of airtime in pre-season. But Karim Mitoma really did give Ashley Young a torrid time. And obviously it resulted in the red card later on in the game. But even from the off, it looked as if he was going to get some joy down that side and obviously open the scoring. Brighton's attack then, given what I said before about, you know, you've got United, Ipswich and Forest at home in three of the next four games. There's that tricky away trip to Arsenal in game week three, of course. But the fixtures don't look too bad from a Brighton attacking perspective. João Pedro looks a little bit more difficult, I think, now for us to choose. I mean, he obviously got the start, nothing in terms of FPL points over the weekend. But I think as you and I discussed pre-game week one, plenty of options now coming in for Hertzler, the new manager, and lots of new signings from a Brighton perspective. So I don't think I'm going to go there. Maybe I'd have a look at Mitoma on that left-hand side, though. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 6-5 options that did well, and there were so many of them going into the season we were looking at. You've already mentioned Nkunku, you know, looking at Bailey, looking at Szoboszlai, looking at Garnacho. There was loads of them. I do think Mitoma was overlooked. I can see why. I mean, it was not the easiest games on paper for Brighton to start the season. Like you say, it gets good from game week four. I think a lot of people are looking at Minté as well at 5-5, a million less.
Yes.
Or looking at Pedro, obviously up front for 5-5. But I think Mitoma is the pick now, because I think you look at the signings that we've got with Gruder coming in on the right, Adingra scoring as well to give some more options on that side. Rutter's confirmed sign, just seen that, 40 million for him. He plays in Pedro's position just behind the striker.
It's a problem for Pedro owners.
Yeah, I know. And Welbeck's off to a great start too. So unless Pedro almost gets pushed up, or it's so hard to predict. But I look at the left and look at Mitoma and think there's no one really that we've got that can do what he does.
Injury for Minter as well, as maybe? Did he go off?
Yeah, he went off with a concussion protocol, but it's been confirmed that was a bit of miscommunication between the physio. There's no injury, that he was fuming to come off.
Yeah, he didn't look happy, did he?
He didn't look happy. He'll be back. He'll be back for next game.
Nice, all right. And Everton, for their part, I think probably Toffees fans will forgive us for saying the less said about that, the better. I think without Onana there, without some key players in their defence, they looked horribly open, didn't they? I'm certainly not going to go and invest in them from an FPL perspective, not with Spurs away coming up in game week two. But I almost wonder whether it's the opposite, as, you know, we talk on these podcasts previous seasons, don't we, about teams to target. Maybe that's one. And I know that Son, you know, didn't get any FPL points this game week for his owners. And at 10 million, they'll be getting twitchy about, you know, maybe selling him. But coming up against an Everton side that were already using their second or third fullback in Ashley Young on that side, you know, going to be suspended for that game now. I'm not sure who they're going to play to put up against Heung-min Son in game week two, but you'd expect him to do pretty well. And Spurs did rack up. Maybe we'll go to Spurs in just a second, but a quick word on Everton before we do. Yeah, you'd expect Spurs to put them to the sword in game week two, no?
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of people who had Son were maybe looking at potentially a move to a Foden or free up some money to move to City.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about Spurs. Obviously, that wasn't the best result for them, but you look at the first half performance they put in, they should have been out of sight. In that game. I don't really know what Everton do at right back. And I think, you know, this could be a bit of a trend, because Brighton overloaded the central areas, the wingers cut in, the wingers went wide. Like, they just couldn't deal with the attacking play. So I think when they come up against, you know, strong attacking wingers, they're going to come under a lot of pressure, and that's going to be a tactic they struggle with this season.
So let's go to Spurs then, as, because, yeah, I've no idea how they weren't sort of 2-3 up by half time in that game. And a shout out, you know, props to Porro owners, got the opening goal. And I tell you what, he ghosted in, didn't he?
Like, strikers, it
was a striker's
finish.
Goal. So good. Yeah, it was. Brilliant finish from Porro. And at 5.5, again, he sort of sat in that bracket for me in game week one, where I was a bit like, oh, I've already got Gabriel, I've got Trent in my back line. Do I want to spend another 5.5 on a defender? The answer was emphatically, from a game week one perspective, yes, you should have gone with him. Created four chances as well, which was the most by any defender in game week one. So a really nice performance. Just didn't get the clean sheet. But as we said before, not sure how he didn't, right? Spurs had 71.3% possession and 10 different players attempted a shot on goal. So they were dominant in this game. Really, really dominant. But yeah, Jamie Vardy, having not been in the league for a year, we kind of, the party was back on in the second half. And actually, when he scored the goal, I thought that Spurs kind of regressed a little bit into their show. And actually, Leicester could have nicked that game, you know. So it was an interesting one. But Pedro Porro, the standout.
Yeah, I mean, on Vardy, I mean, Cooper ruled him out, didn't he? And said he wasn't fit to play.
It was mad, wasn't
we
it?
We thought they were going in with no striker. We thought Mavadidi might be up top. I actually picked him up in the draft game, because I thought, oh, nice. You know, might have penalties, and then he's on the bench and Vardy in and scores. I'm so impressed with him, and, you know, he said after 65 minutes he was absolutely done in that game.
He looked it as well, by the way,
yeah,
didn't he?
but he doesn't seem to have lost any like pace or ability. I mean, he should have scored that when he was through on goal, you know, near the end.
The good
save. Yeah, good save from Vicario, but you'd expect him to score that. And the fact they could have won that game was ridiculous, because I can't remember really a more dominant first half from a team And you saw Postecoglou at the end just looked a broken man after game week one. Yeah, which is normally me after my FPL game week one, but not this time out, luckily. But they needed to score, didn't they? And, you know, Porro scoring is great, but you've got to have your Sons and your Solankes. I thought Brennan Johnson was pretty poor as well. Madison was, I thought, played really, really well in that game.
Madison was good, actually, yeah. He was the standout of the midfielders for me.
He was. But, you know, you need Sons, Solanke and Johnson to score in that game. Solanke, I mean, had a couple of kind of half chances, didn't he? He had an XG of 0.49. So a player of his talent, you'd maybe expect him to score one. But, you know, it was a decent first showing for him. But yeah, how they haven't won that game is crazy.
Yeah, I think I'd go as far as to say more than decent for Solanke. I think there's reasons to be cheerful there. I think certainly in the first half when Spurs were on top and they had all that possession, they used the ball well, right? They did create reasonable chances. They had an XG of 0.49, Solanke. So they were kind of looking for him. He was getting into reasonable positions. I think no panic for me as a Solanke owner. And if I had Son, if I had any of the other Spurs front line, you know, given that they've got that game coming up next against Everton at home, it gets a little bit trickier for Spurs after that, Newcastle away and then Arsenal in 3 and 4. So, you know, depending on what sort of Spurs we see against Everton at home in 2, might tempt me away from Solanke for 3 and 4.
Well, here's one for you, Lee. Would you do Son to Foden?
No, I wouldn't.
If you'd planned on that, you wouldn't do it.
I don't think I would. I just think Foden looked still a little bit off the pace. He's obviously still getting his kind of shooting boots, isn't he? Still getting up to speed, as we saw, right? And I think actually in that game, that's probably a decent segue to go to the Man City game. Why don't we go there next? Foden came on, got plenty of time, and I don't think that Pep Guardiola planned to give him much time as he did. But I guess from an FPL perspective, that's good that he's got minutes in his legs. So you could consider him. But I think to directly answer the question as no, I think I would stick with Son, given that Everton have got so many defensive issues and players coming back and unavailable, particularly on Son's side. I expect them to be particularly weak there. So, yeah, I'd expect Postecoglou to, you know, be ripping into Spurs and get more of a performance out of them in their first home game of the season. But moving on to Chelsea versus Man City then, Az, what do you make of that game? I mean, again, talking about the England boys, we said Foden getting, you know, some more minutes potentially than Pep would have liked, I think. Palmer coming back, still trying to find a bit of match fitness. You know, obviously did well in the Euros, but, you know, didn't play many minutes, if at all, in pre-season. So pretty quiet, failing to register a single shot in the box. I thought he in particular, Palmer, was played a little bit too wide right for my liking. I would have liked to have seen him more central and in areas where he can influence the game alongside Nkunku in particular and Nicholas Jackson. Before we move to Man City, tell me what you thought of Chelsea, because I was kind of surprised to see Nkunku come off before the 60 minutes. I actually thought he'd had a pretty good game. Obviously an intelligent footballer, very, very high IQ footballer that got into all the right areas. I just think that he and Palmer have got to be the go-to there for Chelsea up top. And I just wasn't expecting Nkunku to come off. I think everybody watching that game would have said, yeah, get Nicholas Jackson off, you know, get Nkunku up top in the 9. Or maybe that's my FPL bias, give it, he's in my team, I don't know. But what did you make of that change, and Chelsea in particular? Because got so many players now, Az. I mean, so active over the summer. That does Maresca know who his first 11 is, or his best 11? Or is he still trying players out? They're bringing players on that I didn't even recognise sometimes, you know? I don't know. What do you make of Chelsea?
He's going to have to make some big decisions, because the squad's got to be trimmed down at some point. And there's, you know, there could be 15 players leaving. They've just signed another player in Felix. I know, obviously, Gallagher's gone the other way, but that's another player to add essentially to the thinking, because Gallagher wasn't really in the reckoning. I was quite impressed with Chelsea in a way. Obviously, it's about as hard as it gets in that first game. I think we thought City might be a bit ropier. I did back Chelsea to score in that game, but City just did what they do and ground out a win despite there not being too much between the two teams.
Yeah, they saw the game out well, didn't they? Last 20 minutes, they just sort of, they do what City do and they just controlled things. It was very good.
Absolutely. And Kovacic was excellent in that match. And, you know, you look around a lot of the other players, you think, okay, these players have, you know, like Bernardo and Doku and De Bruyne, like they didn't all have amazing games, but they all just put in a decent 6-7 out of 10. And that was kind of enough, you know, when you've got players who are that capable. The Chelsea attack is just a complete lottery. And I think it was quite telling when Nkunku went off and he didn't get put up to the 9.
Yes.
That does make me think he's not being earmarked as the striker for Chelsea in that side. And they are going to persist with Jackson. And Guiu's there as well, the 18-year-old from Barcelona. And so I think, you know, maybe it happens a bit later on in the season. Maybe Nkunku gets a run, you know, in Europe or something, and it changes Maresca's mind. But I think right now, I think it's going to be Nkunku looking to play in that 10 just behind Jackson, with Neto coming in on the left. And then I guess Palmer stays on the right. But I mean, I prefer Palmer centrally. So if he does move Palmer central, then it is Nkunku either competing with Jackson in the 9, which I'm not sure he's totally there on, or compete with Neto, and they've paid 60 million.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
For him. So I think there's worries about Nkunku. And it's one of the reasons why I didn't go there in the end, because I was a little bit concerned about his minutes.
I was going to ask if he's in your team, Az. I didn't think so. He's not, is he?
No, he was. He was most of pre-season, and then I just got a little bit of cold feet on him. I'd hold him if I had him, but I think you have to assess what Maresca's thinking, because he's such a good player, but if he doesn't really know his best position, then he's not really an option.
Yeah, and this is the thing. When you look at the fixture tick here and you go Wolves, Palace, Bournemouth, West Ham, Brighton, it's there for Chelsea, isn't it? It's there to be done for Chelsea. Mm. So I think I'm with you. I probably will hold Nkunku, but I have all the same anxieties and challenges that you've just said there exactly. He is in my team. And given what we said at the beginning of the podcast about the wealth of options at 6-5, I mean, even in the Brighton match, we reeled off a couple, but there's plenty across the game. And even at 5.5, if you wanted to save some money, we spoke about, you know, wanting to get to, you know, other players. If you want to get to Porro, for example, and you want to upgrade a 4.5 to a Porro, you're going to need a million. And there will be FPL managers looking at Nkunku and going, could I change that to a Smith Rowe, another 5.5, and save myself a million there and invest it to get to Porro? So I can understand why FPL managers might be getting itchy feet. But I just, you know, we saw some really good stuff, I think, from Nkunku in pre-season. And we know what his, you know, pedigree is like. We know what he was like in the Bundesliga. Pretty free scoring, you know, clinical when he gets into the right areas. But therein lies the rub. I'm not sure Maresca, you know, set him up to get into those right areas. Jackson was, and, you know, I like Nicholas Jackson as well, but it's almost like born offside, isn't he, Nicholas Jackson? When I saw the replays and it was like, yeah, mate, you should not be offside there. You got to look along the line, and good forwards know when to go, know where they are. They have good spatial awareness and presence. And I think Nkunku could do a really good job for them there. It's just, why can we all see it, but Maresca can't see it? I don't know. And playing Palmer out wide right, like you said, just not his position. He's going to be far more influential in the middle of the pitch. But yeah, overall, it was a reasonable performance for Chelsea in the first half. Second half, yeah, not so good. And I thought City controlled it well. I agree with you on Kovacic, by the way. Thought he ruled it in midfield.
Yeah, excellent.
De Bruyne, good game and, you know, got a lot of praise, as you'd expect. But Kovacic was the one that really impressed me. FPL-wise, though, for Man City, anybody catching your eye? I want your opinion in particular on Rico Lewis. I think he came out and got some praise from Pep after the game. And he was the one, actually, that off that back force tended to do the inversion. He was the one that kind of inverted into midfield and kind of Guardiol tucked in. In fact, Guardiol, I know that he was popular in FPL at 6 million. So again, an expensive defender in FPL, but a lot of managers going for him. Just 12 touches in the final third, which is the fewest that he's managed in a single match since game week 15 of 23-24. So Guardiol not as attacking as perhaps we would have liked, or his owners would have liked. But Rico Lewis on the other side, inverting, and at 4.5 could be an option.
Yeah, but then you've got Walker, haven't you?
You have.
Coming back. Yeah. I mean, does Walker just not play? I'm not sure. I mean, he's 4-5 as well. If he was 4 million and he was like a Barco or someone, I think you could make the case for it. But he's that little bit more. And, you know, we've already seen with your Quonsas and your Barcos and Nkunku's, I think giving yourself headaches like that isn't really for me. You know, Guardiol still came away from that with a bonus point.
He did, yeah.
Despite no attacking returns, which, you know, is obviously good for their owners. But I think for 6 million, you maybe want to get those extra attacking returns, because otherwise I think you're just going to go for Saliba, right? I would expect Arsenal to keep more clean sheets than Man City this season. So if I'm paying 6 million for just a pure defender, then I think I would go for Saliba. Elsewhere, I mean, the main one for me was Haaland. I know he only got 7 points. You know, he's going into Ipswich at home next. There's going to be a lot of worried fantasy managers who don't own him, for example.
They must have a plan, though, Az. They must have seen that fixture in pre-season and gone, I want Haaland.
I think Foden is probably the plan for those who haven't gone with Haaland. I mean, if you're going into it with no City attack at all, then you're going to be hoping that Ipswich put on a performance like they did in the first half, which we're going to come to in a bit. I think that the telling thing for me about Haaland was him coming out and saying this is basically the best he's ever felt. going into a season.
Yes, he did say that, yeah.
You know, he's injury-free, pain-free. He's obviously had a full rest because he didn't have the Euros to worry about. And that would worry me if I was a non-owner, and it would worry me if I was an Ipswich fan, because a fully fit and ready-to-go Haaland with De Bruyne and Foden both feeding him in that game looks a lock-in. And, you know, he's an easy captain this week going forward, and for a lot of weeks going forward. But elsewhere, there isn't really anywhere else I'd go. You mentioned some of the problems with Foden, not maybe being fully fit, but obviously he's still the pick to go for in midfield. But they're the two, Haaland and Foden. I wouldn't be going anywhere else.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Haaland thing. I think he looked sharp. He did look fit. He took his goal very well. And this was in a game where, you know, decent opposition, particularly in the first half, and his supporting cast are all kind of getting back up to speed or weren't available. You know, we know what an influence Rodri has over that City side. And he wasn't even on the pitch. So when he comes back and Foden gets up to speed, yeah, it didn't look like a really not a big problem, I think, for Savinio. I think on that side, Pep Guardiola came out and said after the game, and I think he reasonably impressed on his Premier League debut as well. So yeah, once they get cooking, Haaland is going to be hard to ignore. Absolutely. And for game week two, if you don't have him, you're going to need to get behind a fairly big sofa, I suggest, because not only will he be absolutely FPL managers that have got him will be captaining him, I think. He'll be highly captained. But, you know, potentially, and I know that Jules and Kelly and Sam will talk about this in the week, but potentially even a triple captaincy option.
We are going to see the triple captain played,
I think so,
on him. And, you know, if this was a bit later on in the season, I might even be tempted. But using that chip this early would worry me a little bit. I mean, your biggest chance of you know, getting away with it if you haven't got Haaland, and that probably leads us on to the Ipswich and Liverpool game, is, like I said, hoping that Ipswich can put in a defensive performance that was reminiscent of what they did in the first half against Liverpool. Because I thought Greaves in particular was absolutely outstanding. You know, he was signed from Hull, quite big money, awesome in the way he marshalled that defence. Had a chance of his own quite early on.
Got well for that, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, as well. And I wasn't really expecting that. I thought, you know, given it was their first game at home, I thought they'd attack that game, maybe be a little bit naive against Liverpool. But clearly they had a game plan, and it worked really well in that first half. And it was only when Kwanzaa, the 4.5 million option, went off that things changed. And I don't think he was directly responsible for, you know, the problems that Liverpool, you know, faced in that first half. Slot came out and said it was tactical and he wanted to bring Konate on for more threat. But there wasn't a lot in it between the aerial duels between them. For example, it wasn't like Konate came on and suddenly he won 100% of his duels and, you know, made 15 clearances that Kwanzaa wasn't making. But it definitely causes problems for Kwanzaa owners going forward, because you just never know when he's going to start.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you said Ipswich, you know, they weren't naive. And I agree with you, although I think in the first half, it was all, you know, vibes, wasn't it? It was all vibes. I sort of was watching the game on TV and I thought...
It's all you need, Lee.
You know... Well, you do. Yeah, yeah. People are tuning into this podcast for some analysis and some stats, but I'm just telling you, it was all vibes in that first half.
They're tuning in for the vibes. They're tuning in for
absolutely.
The vibes.
Yeah, absolutely. But even, you know, even on the TV, I was watching it on BT and you could tell, you know, the fans were properly up for it. The players were properly up for it. They came out of the blocks like unbelievably well. And I think it shocked us, right? I don't think Liverpool were expecting that. We know with Arne Slot and what we've seen in pre-season, Liverpool are a bit more... They're a bit less heavy metal football than under Klopp, if you know what I mean. They're a little bit more patient and a bit more kind of, let's build it up, let's get into the game. Whenever we create a chance, let's create a high XG, a good quality chance, rather than just, you know, peppering the goal and seeing what sticks. So, you know, with that in mind, taking that mentality into it, you know, we're going to have to change that if we come up against, you know, a similar sort of environment and atmosphere away from home. 12:30 kickoff, first game for Ipswich back in the league for 20-odd years. Yeah, they were on it. They were absolutely on it. And they were pressing like absolute monsters as well in that first half. And that's where I think the naivety come into it a little bit, is that when we got into the second half and we kicked off and the whistle went for the second half, obviously we'll talk about the Kwanzaa thing in a minute. But, you know, yes, there was a little bit of a bump from the crowd as soon as that second half kicked off, but it wasn't anywhere near the atmosphere in the first half. And the players maybe came out and thought, right, another 45 minutes of, you know, chasing Liverpool players potentially around the pitch. So yes, Slot made the change, but equally, I think that Ipswich, you know, put so much, they put heart and soul into that first half, that come the second half, I think Liverpool's quality kind of shone through in the end. And particularly that front three, Salah, Jota and Diaz, I've had a lot of questions in pre-season about whether I think that's the, you know, that's the front three that Slot's going to go with.
It's got to be.
I think that it is. No doubt it's Mo on the right-hand side. Luis Diaz, no FPL points, but, you know, got into some good areas, had some chances, worked hard. And I think that's really what I was looking for. And I think Slot would have been looking for in that Ipswich game is who's putting the shift in. Are we pressing as a team? And I hate to go back to, you know, the Firmino, Mane and Salah days, but that was the foundation that the success of that team was built on, was those front three pressing like maniacs together. And I think the front three here, Salah, Jota and Diaz, did exactly the same thing. And a lot of people asking me about whether Nunes is going to come back in. Interesting to see that Gakpo came on over Darwin in that game. So is Darwin ready? Is he fully fit? Is he kind of adapted and taken on the Slot mentality yet? I'm not sure. But Jota did everything.
Is he good enough?
Is it? Yeah, absolutely. That's a question that we're all asking right now under Slot. And Jota, for what it's worth, I think it's his space to lose. I think he did everything in that game that Slot would have wanted him to in terms of dropping deep, getting involved with the play, clinical finish, although he did miss one a couple of minutes before he scored the goal, a header from a Trent cross.
Oh, I was watching it and I couldn't believe it. Trent to Jota would have been
dreamland. Would have been awesome. But yeah, so I think Jota still continues to be amazing value at 7.5. Do I think he's a better option than Salah? Probably not. You know, Salah's the FPL GOAT. We know that from previous 2 or 3, 4, 5 seasons. But you can do a lot with that extra 5 million. And I think Jota is still a really good pick.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously Salah got the big haul, the 14 points. For the first half, he was very, very wired in that game. And I think Trent started to come in a bit more central in that game and started to, you know, thread a few more balls through the middle that he was getting onto. And that was really effective in the end. And they're probably the main reason why Liverpool won that game. Do I think there's 5 million difference between a starting Jota and a starting Salah? I'm not too sure. I think, you know, obviously Salah's got penalties, but if Jota is playing through the middle, like we see, then I think it's close between them. Obviously, Jota's the most at risk of an early-ish sub if things aren't going right. And you mentioned Gakpo. You know, Darwin can come on as something a bit different. I think particularly if Liverpool are losing, that might be something that is a bit of a Hail Mary.
Direct, maybe.
Chuck Darwin on, go direct, have him cause a bit of carnage in the penalty area. So there's always that risk, and that's kind of what you pay for. But yeah, I'm happy to go without Salah and keep Jota. Trent, I think, is going to have a massive season again. I think he could hit 200 points again this season, given from what I've seen, even in that first game. He's going to be so key to all the attacking play. So yeah, I mean, Szoboszlai I was really impressed with. Played really well. You know, we thought he'd be playing in that 10 role just behind Jota, 3 shots of his own and gets the assist for Salah. Two again, 6-5, a bit overlooked. Him and Matoma probably the two standouts in that bracket.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Szoboszlai, you know, in that midfield three, either he or McAllister would kind of drop in with Gravenberg to form the double pivot, and 8 times out of 10 it was McAllister that was doing that. And Szoboszlai was doing the opposite, which was getting up to support Jota, particularly when you're asking your striker in Jota to kind of come a little bit deeper and get involved with the play. You know, then for the 8, Szoboszlai to kind of run in behind him. You know, he was breaking into the box in all the right areas. So, yeah, really, really good. And last word on Kwanzaa. Yeah, a bit of an issue now for his owners. I think, you know, we spoke about not having a headache at the end of game week 1. I think if you've got him, that's a headache now.
Well, it is. And it's like you said, with Nkunku, even if he's a bit of a risk, you still think he could start and get something for you in that game. You know, an attacking option who's a rotation risk isn't ideal, but even if he comes off the bench, he can still get something. Kwanzaa is a headache every week because you never know when he's going to play. He could come on for 15 minutes at the end of the game. He hasn't got any attacking threat at all, even if he does start. So you're completely reliant on him starting and you know, keeping that clean sheet to get you the points. He's a sell for me. I think if you have him, I think you've got to be worried about his price going down as well to 4-4. I think someone like Barco or Johnson, if you've got them at 4 million, it doesn't really matter because you're not planning on playing them. But Kwanzaa's a bigger problem for me. And I would be looking to get rid of him if I had him.
Also locks you out of a Liverpool place, doesn't it? I mean, obviously I'm a bit biased, but there seem to be quite a lot of FPL options in that Liverpool side, even after just 1 game weeks of football. I saw enough there to suggest that we might want to go heavy on them, particularly with the fixtures coming up. Brentford at home next, then away at Old Trafford. Forest and Bournemouth both at Anfield in 4 and 5. So 3 out of the next 4. At Anfield for Liverpool. Yeah, I think you'd want to invest. Let's move it on as Manchester United versus Fulham. kicked us off for the game week on Friday night. A lot of FPL managers going for Bruno Fernandes at 8.5 million, so a reasonable investment there. But, you know, racked up the XG, got some chances, did everything that we'd expect and hope as FPL owners. Just didn't get the points, did he? Just didn't get the points. So what did you make of that game? We'll come to Fulham in a second because I think there's lots of options there and their fixtures look particularly good for the next 4 or 5 weeks. Mm. But let's do Manchester United first and Bruno Fernandes. What do you make of his performance?
Yeah, I mean, pretty even game, that one. I watched it. Obviously, we were out watching that one.
Yes.
I thought they were fine. You know, it's hard to judge them off the back of one game, but I thought they played pretty well. They probably deserved to win it in the end. Fernandes, yeah, I mean, two back-to-back, but you know, big chances, one on one with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
One, he tries the outside of the boot shot. The other one is just a good shot from Leno. He really should be getting some returns from that game. And I think if you've got him, you hold him, and you know,
so.
It's promising, isn't it, to at least see that, even though obviously you want the points. Elsewhere, probably, I mean, Garnacho, you know, obviously was benched, came off, got the assist, probably should have scored. As well.
Definitely should have scored. That was a very high XG chance. The
pass
at the end, yeah.
was a little bit behind him.
Raz,
it wasn't.
Come
it
on.
Wasn't. Yeah. I mean, he should have scored, but it wasn't the best pass to him. So I'll let him off on that.
You're being kind there. You're being kind.
But they're the two, aren't they? They're the two that you go for. I mean, do you go for the defense? Do you pick like an Onana or someone like that? I'm still not totally convinced. Although De Ligt coming in should make them a bit more defensive and maybe a bit better. Mazraoui was obviously the standout, 8 points for him, which is 4-5. He's probably the pick if you're going to go there. But I'm still not totally sold. I think Garnacho would be the one that I'd go for. 6-5 isn't too bad.
I would say Garnacho is the one for me. He's the one that made the difference, I think, and sort of caught the eye coming on. I mean, had he scored that one, and I'm guessing that was an XG of kind of 0.8, 0.9. I think you saying he had a bobbly pass was doing him a service there. I think he definitely should have scored. And if he had
0.68, it was.
Was it 0.68? It was lower than I thought, to be honest with you. But, and you know, Fulham had already pushed up high, hadn't they? So then he just got in behind. But had he scored that and he'd got a goal and an assist and, you know, presumably then 3 bonus points from the game.
Oh, he'd be the bandwagon, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, yes.
He'd be up to 6-6 already and we'd all be talking about him a bit more.
And I think when we'd had the Nkunku conversation earlier, there would have been a lot of FPL managers going, oh, Nkunku off early for a one-pointer, Garnacho on. And, you know, we know the global nature of FPL. We know the global pull of Manchester United, right? When a Manchester United asset goes off, usually, you know, we get, you know, price rises, we get them going from 6-5 to 6-6, 6-7 quite quickly. So he did catch my eye. I don't think for the next two, I mean, Brighton away and then Liverpool, Old Trafford, that looks and sounds on paper pretty tricky. But then Southampton, Palace and Spurs afterwards, that sort of looks a little bit better from my perspective. So from 4, I might start to look at Manchester United. But I'm cognizant of the fact that, you know, if Garnacho does go off against Brighton and performs well at the Amex, then yeah, there's going to be a bit of a bandwagon there. And if we get similar from Nkunku in terms of Wolves away, a one-pointer or, you know, no FPL points, I wouldn't be averse to making that switch. He certainly looks to me as if he's going to be one of the go-tos in that 6.5 bracket, Garnacho.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's nearly 20% owned already. You talk about you talk about the pull of Manchester United and that. I completely agree. If he was going up, we might be having a decision make whether to go early on him or not to try and catch that price rise. But I think like a lot of United assets, we can wait and see, let them settle down. I mean, Ten Hag came out and said they weren't ready to start the season. So it's hard to judge them in that game. So we can wait and see. I mean, Fulham on the other hand, I mean, a lot of us have got Smith Rowe in our teams. A lot of us have got maybe benched a Fulham defender ahead of the great run. Muniz was popular up top. I thought they did all right. Robinson was on for max bonus before they conceded. Smith Rowe didn't put in a great performance. I didn't think. No shot, no key pass. Hooked at 63 minutes, but I think away at Man U isn't really the game to judge him on. And there is a little bit of minutes building with him because he's been so in and out of mostly out of that Arsenal team. So at least he got 63 and we're expecting bigger things. I mean, Mooney's nearly scored an overhead kick at one point. So
that'd have been unreal. Yeah.
Again, I think there's, you know, you're looking at those three players, they're maybe the three most popular and thinking, okay, there was positives there from what I saw in that game. Smith Rowe building minutes, Mooney's trying outrageous kicks, Robinson playing really advanced. And I think you want to be going in with at least one of those for the run they've got.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I do want to give a shout out to Andreas Pereira as well. I know he played a little bit deeper because of Smith Rowe's positioning on the pitch, but once Smith Rowe went off, he then kind of pushed forward a little bit. And I don't know
how did he miss? How did he miss that chance when they were 2-1?
Big chance, yeah. big chance. And I think with him in particular, given that he takes a lot of the set pieces, and we assume, I think on penalties, right? I think I'm right to say you're going to be the penalty taker.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. I'm reasonably confident with that. So, yes, when Smith Rowe plays, he does sit a little bit deeper in kind of the 8 rather than kind of where Smith Rowe sits in the 10. But, you know, FPL, it's a multiple routes to points game if you can. And at 5.5, I do not mind Andreas Pereira at all. I don't know whether I'd go for him or Smith Rowe. Obviously, Smith Rowe's got the ear and the eye of the FPL community right now. But yeah, I think it's one of those two alongside Robinson, who I agree with you, was on for max bonus points. And with the fixtures coming up for Fulham, look very, very good indeed. Let's move it on. Since we're talking defenders, let's talk about Shah and his red card at Newcastle. For those of us that captained Isak, only an assist for Alex Isak, but can't help but think it would have gone a bit differently had they kept 11 men on the pitch, Az.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed with Southampton. I think we look at all three promoted teams and there's positives from them. I think a lot of us have backed those three teams to go straight back down. You know, Russell Martin came out and said he didn't want to change the way Southampton play, and they didn't. I thought they played on the front foot. They were very aggressive. They were really unlucky not to get something from that game.
Yeah, they were.
But, you know, credit to Newcastle for holding out with 10 men. Stupid red card from Cher. Massive overreaction from Diaz.
Well, I think, yeah.
There's as much you can say about that. Hall cleared off the line. He looks a good option at 4-5. Good save from Pope. Yeah, expecting more from Isak. I mean, I expected Newcastle to win that game massively. It was a good pass for the goal, but other than that, didn't do much. And Gordon as well. I went into that game with Gordon, didn't really see much from him either. So yeah, hard to judge, but expecting more against Bournemouth.
Yeah, difficult to judge. I agree. With Shah getting now, you know, a suspension in the Premier League, I'd expect Burn maybe to come into that position, and that maybe locks Lewis Hall, you know, if he was a rotation, which I don't really think he was, but I think his minutes are probably more guaranteed going forward.
So he's a good pick, Hall. He's a good pick.
Getting the yellow card early on in that game, I was sweating a little bit as an owner, thinking, you know, don't do anything stupid now, Lewis, and get yourself sent off. But actually, it was Shah that did that. So I agree with you. Newcastle, okay, happy to hold their assets. Fixtures look pretty good. Let's move it on to West Ham versus Aston Villa. What did you make of that game? 0 shots and only 2 penalty box touches for Watkins. I have to say, wasn't expecting Watkins to play at all, actually. But Unai Emery does what Unai Emery does. That's why he's a great manager, right? Away to West Ham on the opening day, potential banana skin, gets the win and gives Oli, despite those 0 shots and only 2 penalty box touches, gets him an hour worth of football in his legs. So he, you know, presumably will be ready to go for their next game against Arsenal. Good performance from Villa, right? But there were some reasons to be cheerful if you're a Hammers fan.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. I went to that game and thought it was an interesting match. It was quite evenly matched. You know, first half Villa were dominant. Second half West Ham came back into it. Exactly like you say, Emery will be absolutely over the moon.
Delighted.
To get a win away, get minutes for Watkins, see, you know, performances from Bailey, I thought was excellent in that game. Morgan Rogers was fantastic.
Played well, didn't he, Rogers?
He was brilliant. And I think he's going to be a really key part of that team going forward. I'm glad I started.
5 million FPL. Yeah. Have you got him?
I've got him. I started with him.
Yeah, don't mind.
There's a great run for Villa coming from game week 3. Going to be someone we look at. Wasn't really captured in the stats. 2 shots, 2 key passes. But watching the game, watching the way he gets the ball and just drives with it. They don't really have anyone in the centre of the park that can do that. So I think he's going to be a key man playing just behind Watkins from the season. Dean played well as well. 18 final third touches for him. I mentioned Bailey, 5 crosses. Should have scored as well. Hit like the kind of other side of the post. Again, at 6-5 from game week 3. He looks good. But they still look vulnerable from set plays.
They do. And yeah, that was the takeaway for me. Suchek won a lot of deals, a lot of duels, didn't he?
He did. And I do worry about their defence in general. They gave away a penalty. Teams get at them. You know, we're all looking at potentially Konsa or other players, you know, from that game week 3, good run of fixtures. But I don't look at them and suddenly think they're going to kick on from last year in terms of those defensive numbers. So I'll probably be avoiding their defence.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Let's move it on as we're going to talk about Arsenal in just a second, but a quick word from me on Brentford versus Palace. I think if you've got Eze in your team, you are bang unlucky. Bang unlucky. What a goal that was. Well, I say goal, inverted commas goal, because of course the referee blew the whistle before he knocked it in, but it racked up seven shots as well. So if you've got Eze in your FPL team, consider yourself very unlucky. But for me, he would absolutely be a hold with, you know, West Ham at home in two, and I think Leicester at home in four. So he's the one across the whole of the weekend, actually, that I thought, I wish I had. And from a defensive perspective, it's now five assists in 14 matches for Daniel Munoz at 5.0 under Oliver Glasner. So, yeah, if you can afford to get up from an Anderson or a Gehi or one of your other 4.5 defenders to Daniel Munoz, looks like he might be worth the extra. Might be worth investing
and
in the extra.
I'm here with Henderson. Great.
Well, yeah, me too. Me too. Arsenal versus Wolves then to finish up. Saka and Havertz both doing the business, registering five shots each. Not much to choose from an FPL perspective. And I think if you had them both, and there will be plenty of FPL managers that did, you're laughing, right? Those were the two that got the points.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Arsenal were brilliant in that game. They were occasionally a little bit sloppy, and I think Wolves should have scored at least one of the chances they were gifted in that game. But I was disappointed with Wolves. A little bit disorganised, not loads of pressure on the ball. They made it a bit easy for Arsenal work at times. Almost like they kind of given up before they even went into the game, which, you know, is a shame. But Arsenal are a very, very good side. And it's one of those games where the FPL points, I think, tells the story of the game. Saka and Havertz were the most threatening players. Both came away with big hauls. You'll be frustrated if you're a Martinelli owner or an Odegaard owner, but I think it's quite clear that Saka and Havertz are the standout picks in that side. The fixtures aren't great, but when they turn, very likely I'll have both.
Yeah, I agree. And I think of all the teams that I saw this weekend, you know, City, would you say laboured to the win against Chelsea, but you sort of did it the hard way. Liverpool, you know, not great in the first half, but better in the second. Spurs kind of just, you know, dropping points at Leicester. Not a bit of it at the Emirates. Not a bit.
It was the most convincing performance of the week, for sure.
They looked on it for me, and they look like they mean business. And from that perspective, I'm pretty happy to have Saka in my team. I've got Gabriel as well. And I think you're right. I'll probably stick with those two until the fixtures turn. It's Villa away in two, as we mentioned before. They've got Spurs, the North London Derby in four, City away in five. So it is tricky, you know, three of the next four away from home. So probably just going to stick with the two. But I think from about 6-7 onwards, when those fixtures turn for Arsenal, I will definitely be going there. Anything else on Wolves just before we finish up?
Yeah, like I said, I think they should have scored. They had an XG of 0.58 in that game. You'd expect them to score one of the chances they were given. Chelsea next, they're going to need to be more organised, I think, against them. And if they are, they could frustrate. The fixtures are so bad, though, that I don't think we're going to be considering any of their options going forward. But that Larsson or Kuhner or Hwang becomes an option for us at some point, but definitely not for now. Nori got into some good positions, another one to consider at his price. But
He did. Yeah. And they had a 4.0 starting defender as well, Mosquera. I think I've said that correctly. Yep. Maybe a bit of a lucky boy to stay on the pitch, actually, from some of the highlights that I saw with his tangle with, I think it was Havertz, wasn't it? And maybe in the second half. But 4.0 starting defender. So we always look for those, don't we, in FPL? So yeah, you take your risks with him because it's Wolves and they've got difficult fixtures. But yeah, one for the radar.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go right till game week 9 before they get a good run of fixtures. So hard avoid on Wolves.
Totally.
So we won't be thinking of any Wolves players, Lee, but what are you thinking for your own team? Any big transfers planned?
Do you know what? I think I tried to set my team up for the first few weeks. So no, unless there's anything sort of significant that comes out during the week, you know, any injuries to my players, then pretty sure I'm going to roll the transfer as was the plan before game week 1. And, you know, Haaland is sitting there in my team ready to come in as captain, maybe triple captain, maybe. We'll have that conversation potentially with Kelly, Jules and Sam later on in the week. But yeah, probably a bit of a boring week for me. Roll the transfer and captain Haaland.
Yeah, I think unless you've planned in a Man City attacker, you should hopefully be set up in a way where you don't have to make a transfer. I think Quants is the biggest problem that a lot of people will want to deal with.
Yeah.
I can see why people are wanting to move him on. Yeah, it's no transfer planned for me. Leave Barco there. I had Johnson as well, who didn't play. And I'm a little bit worried about Porro's not, because it means I might be down to two defenders if they don't turn up. But I think
FPL's truly back now, Az.
It is. But, you know, if game week one didn't go to plan for you, no reason to panic. We both think it's good to hold your free transfers. Mm. Let's get some more information, another 90 minutes of football and go from there. But if you do really feel like everything's gone completely wrong for you, you can always wildcard, can't you?
You can always wildcard. Maybe a bit too early for that. Let's see. Whatever your transfer plans this week, folks, don't forget to join Kelly, Jules and Sam on the FPL Pod on Thursday as they look ahead to Game Week 2.
And if you haven't already, join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is Q7YCO0.
Good to see you, Az.
Good to see you too, Lee.
Bye-bye.